Good afternoon. This is Bob Krueger with Thought for Food for August of 2021. This program is heard on the third Wednesday of the month at 4 p.m. and repeated on the third Saturday of the month at 3 p.m. It's intended for a blind and print-impaired audience, but hopefully it will be of interest to everyone. August is the only month of the year without a national holiday, but there are several dates to remember. The first is Air Force Day. The United States Coast Guard was founded on the 4th in 1790, and on the 7th, the Purple Heart Medal was established in 1782. The 19th is National Aviation Day, and the 26th is Women's Equality Day. A spinning plate food truck stands out as you pass it, with bright blue and green plates painted on a black background and the friendly face of Dejah Johnson smiling out from a side window. The truck exudes a warm welcome. But Spinning Plate is not your average food truck. It's part of Interfaith Food Shuttle's initiative to address hunger in neighborhoods in the Raleigh area by bringing free hot meals to places that need them most. And it does so with the support system of restaurants and grocery stores who donate surplus food to the organization. The Spinning Plate then supplements that supply with fresh produce raised at the company's farm. Interfaith Kitchen prepares the meals at its headquarters in Raleigh before sending them out on the truck. Interfaith has so many different programs, our culinary apprenticeship program, our farm, our food recovery program, and they all kind of culminate into one program, said Laura Rice, the communications and media manager for Interfaith. The Spinning Plate is an extension of the organization's original food truck concept, but can serve more menu options. Meals can be anything from chicken with rice and vegetables to soups and brie and cheddar grilled cheese sandwiches. The truck, which formally launched in mid-April, serves an area spanning seven counties in the Raleigh area: Wake, Durham, Chatham, Johnson, Nash, and Edgecombe counties. It usually operates one to three times a week and is usually invited by local churches, schools, soup kitchens, and charities. The organization depends on its host to advertise that it will be in a particular neighborhood. We've done over 7,000 meals since we started at the beginning of February, said Josh Maple, the food truck manager. The Spinning Plate is one of the many initiatives Interfaith Food Shuttle uses to combat hunger in North Carolina. In the seven counties, the organization serves 257,210 people don't know where their next meal is coming from. And one in five children in North Carolina are at the risk of hunger, according to their website. All this means that with a population that is 15.9% food insecure, North Carolina is the 10th hungriest state in the nation. Dejah Johnson is the youngest of a team of cooks who works with Interfaith Food Shuttle. She's a graduate of Interfaith's Culinary Apprenticeship Program, known as CAP. She first discovered Interfaith Food Shuttle as a freshman in high school in 2010 and immediately fell in love with its mission. She always loved cooking and food, and she loves sharing her passion with others whenever she can. My role model growing up, she couldn't read or write, but could she cook? And I guess that always stuck with me, she said. When she graduated from high school in 2014, she learned that CAP, which aims to provide a culinary education for disadvantaged youth in the area. It started off as a program that helped low-income people, like maybe they had a risky path, and it helped them establish themselves as a productive citizen, Ms. Johnson said. Today, the program's graduates are placed at restaurants and charity organizations throughout the area. Ms. Johnson joined the program in January of 2020, and a few months later, COVID changed the world and brought her time with CAP to a halt. Our staff had to go into overdrive, basically, in preparing meals that were going out to schools and families, Ms. Rice said. The pandemic turned out to be a blessing in disguise for Ms. Johnson. Although CAP closed in March to allow its staff to help meet the increased demand for food, Dejah and her fellow students were invited to help with different initiatives. Her involvement in the kitchen during the critical days of the pandemic became an opportunity to learn and grow. Deja never missed a beat. She came in every day and stuck throughout the whole thing, Miss Rice said. When the pandemic settled down, Miss Johnson finished her time at CAP and joined the team as a full-time employee. And when trials with the spinning plate began in February, she quickly became involved in assisting Mr. Maple. Typically, a CAP graduate would spend several years after graduation interning or working part-time, either with the organization or in restaurants. Miss Johnson was able to accelerate to working a full-time position at Interfaith within a year. Since it was a pandemic before I graduated CAP, I just started cooking with the staff as staff part-time, she said. And as people had to drop out for whatever reason, I got more and more responsibility where I could work my way into being a full-time employee. Ms. Johnson has embraced the learning opportunities at Interfaith Kitchen. The kitchen is basically like a family, she said. Everyone shares knowledge of what they know about. On days the food truck is going out, Mr. Maple and Ms. Johnson work together to create menus and prepare meals for the day. He might have a menu that he has already planned, or we might look into the warehouse and see what they have a brief discussion, and then we'll make the food here, she said. Then around 10 or so, we load up everything on the truck, get the truck prepped, and then we drive out. Although Miss Johnson and Mr. Maples usually prepare meals beforehand, the truck is fully outfitted to prepare meals on site. Many food trucks are designed around one specific item, so they are outfitted accordingly. This truck was designed and equipped so it can do almost anything. The team plans to use spinning plate in tandem with a support truck, the original food truck, to assist in disaster relief during hurricane season. Should a storm hit this region, we can respond, take the trucks out, set them up, feed the first responders and the volunteers and people who've been affected by the storm, Miss Rice said. We can give them hot meals. The spinning plate is helping Interfaith meet the demand of a hungry community by allowing the team to meet them where they're most needed. My favorite thing about cooking is actually watching people eat the food, Miss Johnson said. I know that sounds creepy, but someone being shocked that food just tastes that good, you can tell that they're enjoying it, and that brings me joy. My youngest daughter drove a truck for the food shuttle for a number of years. The Triangle area seems to be a magnet when it comes to food companies. Among the latest to come our way is Lawrence Barbecue, a long-anticipated barbecue project from Chef Jake Woods. Lawrence opened its doors June 5th and served food until they ran out. We wanted to do it Texas style and line it up early, he said. Lawrence will be a part of the Boxyard RTP development, a small dining and retail district built out of shipping containers in the Research Triangle Park. The project is anchored by a new full-stream brewing location, including Bayou Cafe, Bocogo Busey Bakes, Carburitos, and other shops. Lawrence will be the first vendor to open, with others expected throughout the summer. Perhaps it is fitting that from the ashes of 2020, North Carolina's most beloved food tradition, barbecue, is seeing a resurgence. Lawrence is a part of a new generation of pitmasters launching new takes on the centuries-old style of cooking, including a recently opened Sam Jones Barbecue in Raleigh, Prime Barbecue in Knightdale, Big Belly Q in Chapel Hill, and upcoming projects from Longleaf Swine and Ed and Ryan Mitchell's The Preserve. With Lawrence, Mr. Wood aims to marry an amount of Texas swagger with some of North Carolina's proudest products, namely pork and oysters. The menu at Lawrence will include bacon-cured Texas-style brisket, pulled pork, fried chicken sandwiches, pork belly, burnt ends, and oysters, both raw and grilled. The Lawrence that opened in June is not exactly the barbecue spot Mr. Wood initially envisioned. Instead of the sliced-by-the-pound trays, the barbecue popularized by overhead pictures on Instagram, Lawrence has shifted more towards sandwiches like brisket with a vinegary slaw and pulled pork with pickled onions and a thick slice of pickle. Inside, Lawrence has only room for 14 seats, but Mr. Wood expects orders to be taken through a cabana window and taken to a patio space with room for more than 100. Lawrence spent last year doing a number of nomadic pop-ups, selling barbecue for months from a parking lot off of Glenwood Avenue, then setting up breweries, restaurant markets, and a resident at Y Hill in Raleigh they called Crowd Surfers. The COVID-19 pandemic forced Mr. Wood into a different sort of year than he had imagined. Barbecue patience is eventually rewarded, but Mr. Wood said the hardest part of navigating a pandemic and construction delays are never knowing where the end point would be. This year hurt a lot, he said. It was difficult, even if it looked great and felt great at the time. When you don't have a home kitchen, there's a level of difficulty and stress that's always there. We're sharper for it, but man, did it suck a whole lot. We've learned a lot and thankfully have been able to make enough money to survive, but we're pumped. It's game time. Lawrence, welcome to the Triangle. Lawrence is not the only new guy in town. A national food truck chain plans to open its first North Carolina location at 709 West P Street in Raleigh. The Houston-based food truck fleet, Ababa Omar Halal, planned to open in midsummer. Abu Omar Halal's specialties are Mediterranean and Mideast dishes, including shawarma, kebabs, and falafel, and caters to a lunch and late-night crowd, owner Mohammed Altawaha said. The truck will serve 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to at least midnight. We pair best with any nightlife areas, universities, the business areas, and cities, he said. Mr. Altawaha moved from the country of Jordan to Houston in 2008 for grad school and also started to managing restaurants. He said he pursued a master's in five majors but never finished, gravitating to the kitchen. When he first launched a food truck, it was called Abu Omar Taco and served Halia tacos. The first food truck started as a joke, he said. I wanted to try something new, but Houston wasn't really ready for food trucks at that time. He went back into the restaurant for years and then launched Abu Omar Halal in 2015, and that's when it took off, landing in the middle of a national love affair for food trucks. He says most popular sellers are his version of beef and chicken shawarma, a wrap of grilled meat with pickles, garlic sauce, and fries. In the beginning, Omar said he couldn't find satisfactory flatbread, so he used what was close by in Houston, flour tortillas. A Mexican tortilla is 80% like the real thing, he said. There are 7 brick-and-mortar Abu Omar locations and more than 60 food trucks spread from Los Angeles to Oklahoma City, Baton Rouge, and Tampa Bay. Most are located in large cities in Texas, including Houston, San Antonio, Dallas, and Austin. Mr. Altawaha is considering franchising the country, but for now he owns all the locations, signing up managing partners to run specific trucks or restaurants. The manager of the Raleigh truck, Omar said, grew up in Charlotte and ran a location in Dallas. And venturing into North Carolina, he said the choice came down to Raleigh or Charlotte. He said, Raleigh is nicer than Charlotte, so we came to Raleigh. We'll start with a food truck and see if we can build from there. I'd like to taste their wares. In the early days of the pandemic, owners of Beach Warmer Bagels wondered if the world still needed a bagel, if in a time of uncertainty there was any comfort to be found in cream cheese. The bagel shop in Raleigh's transfer company food hall stripped down the menu to just bagels and cream cheese and sold out early in the morning. I think it was people saying, we're here for you, said co-shop owner Sam Kirkpatrick. I bet some of those bagels were thrown away after the first week because people ordered so many. It was a sign of trust and hope. And now the team behind Bench Warmers Bagels, Bolted Bread, and Jubala Coffee are expanding with a new project born from the pandemic. Bright Spot Donuts, the new shop in the Benchwarmer family, We'll open at 1501 Sunrise Avenue in the Five Points East neighborhood in Raleigh. The star will be a glazed yeast donut with a few classics and seasonal filled varieties. The owners are Kurt Patrick and Josh Bellamy, who started Bolted Bread, Andrew Cash of Jabala Coffee, Benchwarmers head chef John Knox, and Benchwarmers brand director Sarah Millsaps. Thinking about the airy sweetness of donuts became a kind of practice in positivity during the pandemic, the owners say. This is one of the futures we decided to believe in, Mr. Kirkpatrick said. There aren't too many foods that define joy better than a donut. The name Bright Spot might not exist without last year, where virtually everyone suffered some kind of a loss or pain. The donut shop, Mr. Kirkpatrick said, is a way to memorialize the last year and try to carry it toward better times. We want to make sure we mark the moment, he said. Sarah has reminded us that the bright spot doesn't exist without the dark. But even then, Millsaps said, silver linings aren't obvious. It definitely takes work, Miss Millsaps said. Bright spots don't just appear. You have to see them. The bright spot space will be around 800 square feet, a good portion which will be the fryer and the glazing station where diners can watch the fresh from the fryer donuts coated in silken sugar. There will be espresso and coffee programs built by Mr. Cash. The small building is being renovated. It will have part of a wall removed. It will be replaced with larger windows looking toward downtown Raleigh and a door leading to a side path. The goal is to open Bright Spot by the end of 2021. If we catch it this year, it'll be a win, Mr. Kirkpatrick said. Mr. Kirkpatrick said Brit's Donut Shop, a Carolina Beach favorite where fans line up in the summer for glazed yeast donuts, was something of an inspiration. The peak in everyone's mind is Brit's, he said. You basically can't eat enough of them. We have so much awe and respect for institutions like that. The menu at Bright Spot will be tight. The foundation of a donut shop menu is a glazed one. We have high hopes for that. Mr. Knox will lead the kitchen at Bright Spot, creating seasonal fillings and some secret savory offerings. He grew up loving Krispy Kreme, perhaps the worldwide donut standard, but expect some new creations from Bright Spot. Everyone has a nostalgic donut they love, but everyone seems open to try new things, Mr. Knox said. No one is going to say, donut, I don't want to try that. Before the pandemic, Benchwarmers was flying high. The bagel shop was named one of Bon Appetit's best new restaurants in the country in 2019. From there, it started expanding into dinner service, adding rectangular pizzas and serving ambitious specials like braised lamb and ricotta dumplings and roast squash and foie gras. Then the beginning of COVID-19 panic in 2020 threw Benchwarmers and every other restaurant into a tailspin. We were coming together and trying to stay open, but there were several crazy weeks leading up to the moment when it was impossible to go on in the same way, Mr. Kirkpatrick said. We wondered how far we can strip down. Will people keep coming if we only have bagels and tubs of cream cheese and a bare coffee menu? People did, and then some. Benchwarmers moved entirely online for months and served bagels and coffee out of the food hall's side door. Now things are nearly back to normal with the menu nearly built back to what was pre-pandemic. The Bright Spot owners are thinking long-term, wondering what the next Raleigh institutions will be like and whether they might include a bagel shop, a bakery, and a donut spot. We want to have kids here who are going to bring their kids in 30 years and say, this is my favorite donut of all time, Mr. Knox said. Our favorite places have been around since the 50s and before. So that's the goal. The five owners, all Raleigh natives, have no plan of going anywhere else. We all grew up here, so it's personal, Mr. Kilpatrick said. If we build something, we want it to last. We want to impact and participate in this hometown that raised us. I'm always ready for a good donut and a cup of coffee. The January and February 2021 issue of Smithsonian Magazine has an interesting history of one of our most used foods. I'll share this story with you. It begins. North Americans weren't the first people to grind peanuts. The Incas beat us to it by a few thousand years. But peanut butter reappeared in the modern world because of an American, the doctor, nutritionist, and cereal pioneer, John Harvey Kellogg, who filed for a patent for a proto-peanut butter in 1895. Kellogg's food compound involved boiling nuts and grinding them into an easily digestible paste for patients at the Battle Creek Sanitarium, a spa for all kinds of ailments. The original patent didn't specify what type of nut to use, and Kellogg experimented with almonds as well as peanuts, which were much cheaper. While modern peanut butter enthusiasts would likely find Kellogg's compound bland, Kellogg called it the most delicious nut butter you've ever tasted in your life. A seven-day Adventist, Kellogg endorsed a plant-based diet and promoted peanut butter as a healthy alternative to meat, which he saw as a digestive irritant and, worse, a sexual stimulant. His efforts and his elite clientele, which included Amelia Earhart, Sojourner Truth, and Henry Ford, helped establish peanut butter as a delicacy. As early as 1896, Good Housekeeping magazine encouraged women to make their own with a meat grinder and suggested pairing the spread with bread. The active brains of American inventors have found new economic uses for the peanut, the Chicago Tribune newspaper said in July of 1897. Before the end of the century, Joseph Lambert, an employee at Kellogg Sanatorium, who may have been the first person to make the doctor's peanut butter, had invented machinery to roast and grind peanuts on a large scale. He launched the Lambert Food Company, selling the nut butter and mills to make it, starting countless other peanut butter businesses. As manufacturing scaled up, prices came down. A 1908 ad for Delaware's based Loeber's peanut butter, since discontinued, claimed that just 10 cents worth of peanuts contained as much energy as a porterhouse steak. Technical innovations would continue to transform the product into a staple, something Yanks couldn't do without and many foreigners considered appalling. By World War I, U.S. consumers, whether convinced by Kellogg's nutty nutrition advice or not, turned to peanuts as a result of meat rationing. Government pamphlets promoted meatless Mondays with peanuts high on the menu. America soon may be eating peanut bread spread with peanut butter and using peanut oil for our salad, the Daisy Missourian newspaper reported in 1917. The nation's food science are nothing if not ingenious, and peanut butter posed a slippery problem that cried for a solution. Manufacturers sold tubs of peanut butter to local grocers, advising them to stir it with a wooden paddle, according to Andrew Smith, a food historian. Without regular effort, the oil would separate out and spoil. And then in 1921, a Californian named Joseph Rosefield filed a patent for applying a chemical process called partial hydrogenation to peanut butter, a method by which the main naturally occurring oil in peanut butter, which is liquid at room temperature, is converted into an oil that is solid or semi-solid at room temperatures and thus remains blended. This practice is used as substitutes for lard and butter, such as oleomargarine and Crisco. Mr. Rosefield was the first to apply his technique to peanut butter. The more stable spread could be shipped across the country, stocked in warehouses and left on shelves, clearing the way for all the national brands we know today. The only invention that did more for peanut butter than hydrogenation was sliced bread, introduced by a St. Louis baker in the late 1920s, which made it easier for kids to construct their own PB&Js. In this century, the average American kid eats some 1,500 peanut butter and jelly sandwiches before graduating from high school. Mr. Rosefield went on to found Skippy, which debuted crunchy peanut butter and wide mouth jars in the 1930s. In World War II, tins of hydrogenated Skippy were shipped with service members overseas, while the return of meat rationing at home again led civilians to peanut butter again. Even today, when American expats are looking for peanut butter, they often seek out military bases. They're guaranteed to stock it. But while peanut butter's growing popularity abroad is growing, in 2020, the peanut butter sales in the United Kingdom, that's England, overtook the sales of the Brits' beloved jam. Enjoying the spread is still largely an American quirk. People say to me all the time, when did you know you had fully become an American? Anna Navarro, a Nicaraguan-born lady, told the NPR in 2017, and I said, the day I realized that I love peanut butter. All the United States lags behind China and India in peanut harvest, Americans still eat far more of the spread than people in other countries. Its gooey taste of nostalgia for childhood in American history. What's more sacred than peanut butter? Iowa Senator Tom Harkin asked in 2009 after a salmonella outbreak was traced back to tainted jars. By 2020, when Skippy and Jif released their latest peanut butter innovation, squeezable tubes, nearly 90% of American homes reported consuming peanut butter. The ubiquity of this aromatic spread was even figured in the nation's response to COVID-19. As evidence emerged last spring that many COVID patients were losing their sense of smell and taste, Yale University's Dana Small, a psychologist and neuroscientist, devised a smell test to identify stomach carriers. In a small 3-month study of healthcare workers in Haven, everyone who reported a severe loss of smell using the peanut butter later tested positive. What food do most people in the United States have in their cupboards that provide a strong familiar odor? Dr. Small asked. That's what led us to peanut butter. We cannot speak of peanuts and peanut butter without paying credit to Dr. George Washington Carver. No American is more closely associated with peanuts than he is, developing hundreds of uses of them, from Worcestershire sauce to shaving cream to paper. But our curiosity about peanuts, scholars say, has obscured his greatest agricultural achievement, helping black farmers prosper free from the tyranny of cotton. Born enslaved in Missouri around 1864 and trained in Iowa as a botanist, Dr. Carver took over the Agriculture Department of Tuskegee Institution in Alabama in 1896. His hope was to aid black farmers, most of whom were sharecroppers, trapped in perpetual debt to white plantation owners. I came here solely for the benefit of my people, he said upon arrival. He found that cotton had stripped the region's soil of its nutrients, and yet landowners were prohibiting black farmers from planting food crops. So Dr. Carver began experimenting with plants like peanuts and sweet potatoes. And we've run out of time for today's episode of Thought for Food. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Bob Kroger, reading for the North Carolina Radio Reading Service. So long until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138.